Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Difficult Conversations, where we tackle taboo topics in a safe space through empowerment and education. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered professional mental health advice. Today, we are talking about money, 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 and relationships. So I'm really excited about this topic because I feel like my husband and I are like money languages are on opposites. So like I had him sit down and take a money language assessment because I guess nowadays like there's a language about everything. But so I was like on this side, a believer where like we kind of hope and wish that we have enough money for everything. And he was on the opposite end of like planning and really wanting to make sure things are paid for and only paying for things in cash and being able to afford it, da, 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 and all this stuff. So
I think I wanted to kind of go back a little bit of like kind of giving the audience introduction around financial literacy and what it means and what does that look like for all of us, and whether you're single, whether you're married, whether individually, just kind of financial planning, what does that look like for you? I think growing up, a lot of us are not really thought to what needs to happen with money because for us is money has attached to survival. And being able to kind of spend what we have, not to kind of even plan ahead, like rainy day or emergency day or somebody getting sick day or and if there's some sort of a crisis happened, what do we do? And so I feel like this conversation that today we're having is like intro to a lot of financial traumas that a lot of us experience because we don't know what needs to happen. And there are people who are hoarder. There are people who are overspender. That's the two extents that you meet in our community in general, whether it's Muslim community, immigrant community overall. The people who are hoard the money is like, we're going to have to hold on tight because we don't want to be poor again. Right?
Like the Harvey says, everything comes from a trauma response.
Yes, everything comes from it. And then there are people who's like, I don't know if I'm going to see another day, so I'm going to enjoy my life to the fullest and spend what I have. And there's no need for me to plan. And that includes with kids, with future for the kids and for themselves as a couple too. And so I'm wondering for both of you who are married, what was that conversation like? Like, I'm sure you kind of talked about that a little bit with you and your husband talking about financial literacy, financial planning prior to getting married, or is that something that you guys did after you got married?
Oh, no, it's after.
Okay.
Planning, it's after, but we did talk about, like, how much money do you have and how much debt do you have and and what's, like, your spending habit? What are your goals? How do you process money? How do you feel about money? Like, that kind of thing, but not planning. I think for us, the thing the Habe you mentioned when you said, you know, with culturally, like, we don't have enough, not most of us at least, we don't have enough money to, it's like money is a, it's like savings is a luxury, right? Savings is a luxury. Planning for a rainy day is a luxury because most of the time, especially back home, you get monthly checks, right? Like the husband or wife, they bring monthly checks home. And then that monthly check is like a rationed throughout the month. So the kids have to be fed, the kids have to go to school, the kids uniform, you know, like all of these things, and then you pay for your rent, and then by the 30th you're itching waiting for that paycheck to hit. Rainy day is a luxury back there. So that from that aspect comes two different people, like I'm sure the Habe you mentioned also, the hoarders and this, you know, the spenders. The spenders spent because they never got a chance to spend, right? Like they never, like, oh, when I was a kid, so and so had the best shoes and so and so had the best, you know, games and so on and so forth, the best house. So now that I have money, I want those things that I never had when I was a kid. And then the other ones are like, oh, because my parents didn't have money and they were struggling a lot, I want to make sure I never have to feel that way, that I will have it, even though I'm not going to spend it. But if I want to spend it, I will have it. So both of those are like trauma responses from not having money. Mm-hmm. For me and my husband, I also grew up in a relatively paycheck to paycheck household. Mm. You know, I don't think my parents would have been okay, like if you know their paycheck got cut at some mm-hmm. point. So for me, but then the good thing about my parents also is that they were very honest about our financial situation. Mm-hmm. So they never like shielded us or whatever. They were very like, hey, you know, this is how much we get. And this is how much the things that we, and mm-hmm. then we can't afford this. We can afford this. And they were my mom specifically, she was very much, like never made me feel like we don't have it, mm-hmm. but then instead of this, get this anyway. Like mm-hmm. it's the same thing. Sigale, mm-hmm. not like, oh, you can't have it. It's the must. Like you, if you have it, you will die. Like someone will like not have food.
Right.
You know, like instead of spending 10 bir, like let's spend 5 bir on this. Or, mm-hmm. you know, we can't go out all the time, but like, let's go out like on Fridays, mm. you know, that way I never felt that need to like want to spend all the time mm. or the need to like hoard everything. So I live
you came
in that
from two income household then?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, and my dad, he was a spender. Like my mom was the financial brain in our family. Mm. She was my dad came and gave the paycheck to my mom. Mm. She was like, spend it, like, mm. you know, do something with the household. Mm. So, but she always kind of designated like, on Fridays, we would go out for juice, like after work, after mm-hmm. school and after work and stuff like that. So, or like we once a month, we'd go to like Mercato and like buy clothes or something or Eid. Actually, mm-hmm. that's not true. Not clothes. We'll go to Mercato and buy something small. Mm-hmm. During Eid and Ramadan and like birthdays, we will get brand new clothes and mm-hmm. shoes, you know. Yeah. So you never felt like without. And then within your community, everybody's doing the same thing, right? Yeah. So you're fine.
That's a norm.
So you don't, I didn't grow up with that, like, oh, I have to hoard or I have to save. Mm-hmm. I just was like, if I have it, I will do what's reasonable with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you know the mediums.
Yeah. Growing up, my mom was the financial breadwinner in the family. And so I grew up with her working and she always tried her best to provide for us. Like, you know, if anybody, all the other kids would have phones or whatever. She tried her best, you know, to give mm-hmm. us as well. So then after we got married, I think I made it a point to have that conversation about finances early on. Mm-hmm. Because they, you know, they say that financial problems are probably one of the leading causes of arguments in a relationship. And, you know, when you're not, it's a big stressor, you know, especially when you're not on the same page. And when you are talking to somebody and, you know, he or she has put up a front about like either having a lot of money or mm-hmm. not having a lot of money. Yep. And then after the marriage, the reality hits, mm-hmm. you know. So my husband and I have been really good about talking every situation out, talking, you know, purchases and kind of seeing, okay, what do we have? What can we afford? And stuff like that. And me personally, I've always been like, I would rather like, spending on other people I have no issues with, mm. right? Like my kids and mm-hmm. buying stuff. But for some reason, like buying something for me, if it's like really, really expensive, I kind of like, oh, Abshiral, you know,
very
you really
relatable.
Don't need that.
Yeah, very you know? Relatable.
Yeah, you really don't need that or like, you know, it's too expensive or whatever. So I'm really trying to get out of that headspace of mm-hmm. like, if I want it, then just buy it, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Especially if you like, if I have the means and I have the money. Yeah. So I'm like, I worked a lot on trying to not have that remorse. You know, mm. you go to the store, you buy a really nice perfume, mm-hmm. and then you go home, it's like, oh, did you really need that or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I grew up the same as Bonnie. Mm-hmm. I had two parents who they're two income, but my mom worked a lot harder than I would say my dad. Mm-hmm. My dad will give. Was in Oromo Damoza, you know, like mm-hmm. rent, monthly income, like
salary.
Yeah. He'll give, but sometimes like it's not enough. And mm-hmm. my mom wants to splash a little bit and do more. Like, yeah. let's say, for example,
what is that again?
Damoza?
Is that you the same of Amharic, like... Right?
That is Amharic word, but I don't know in Oromo.
Is that the same thing as like the Islamic concept of nafaqa? Where like...
No, it's just salary. Damoz means salary.
I know, but I'm saying like the husband pays the wife, right?
The monthly, oh. I hear, take care of the house. And
yeah, buy. So it's the same then. So yeah. The concept of nafaqa.
Exactly.
Okay.
So my dad would do that. And my mom, like, she likes to do more. Like, let's say, for example, this is an example about like meat, right? Mm-hmm. Meats are very expensive regardless of what country you live in.
Yeah.
And if my dad give like, let's say $100 for the lunch and dinner meals for mm-hmm. the ration or
mm-hmm. Is that a grocery. Monthly payment she gets?
It's not, that's not monthly, mm-hmm. but then he gives her a specific amount monthly. And okay. that's, I say he doesn't do monthly, he do daily.
Uh-huh.
So because he's like, he do daily for breakfast, lunch and dinner and whatever extra things I need to be buy for that day. Mm. And so if my mom wants to buy something extra, she doesn't go ask my dad. Instead, she use her own money because she also works.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I grow up in that environment of two people working and financial literacy is not really something that discussed. It's more like you have to have money. And you can't really rely on one person to take care of you. For me, as in now, as an adult, being able to like kind of take care of myself as the my only financial person who does it, is that I had to learn the unlearn a lot of financial traumas that I was raised around, based on the environment that I was in. Because I come from a small town, Awadai, which means that there's not a lot of like, it's more like a daily thing, like the same way my dad does it, than monthly thing. So for me, I have to unlearn those things like, oh, what are the things that I'm still doing today that is similar to my household? Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the things that I did, which we're going to go into, is that I kind of learned, did a lot of like YouTube learning and reading books and like learning about rainy day, emergency money, vacation money, saving money, and then investment money. How do you invest your money? Do you invest your money in stocks? I didn't know anything about stocks until COVID. And so I start learning about saving and doing stock investment in COVID. And like not doing a lot of extensive money that is that as someone who's now has that understanding of like there's other way of investing and saving for your rainy days and things like that, is that the idea of one of the things that is really fear orientated for me is just going negative in my account. Like going, checking out my checking accounts, you know, seeing a negative, that's like a heart attack and a stroke and aneurysm at the same time happening.
Have you ever had one of those months, like for me, this used to happen like in college, where I avoid my bank account, looking at my bank account like for a week because I know either it's like low account, it's going to make me sad. I just don't spend and I just don't look at it. I'm just like, yeah. Until my paycheck comes, I'm just mm-hmm. not going to look at it.
Yeah.
And I read that actually people that don't have, like that are very tight mm-hmm. in their budget or if they're very tight in their income, they don't look at their spending.
No.
They look at their spending least and they look at their bank account the least That's amount true. Versus people that have a lot of money in their bank account.
That's true.
They look and check more, which is kind of
opposite.
Yeah. I feel like if you have a lot of money, you would just like raha it out.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And I think also,
it's the guilt conscious though, right?
It's like, it's also anxiety-inducing. Yeah. Like if you look at it.
Yeah.
And you know what you don't have, mm-hmm. you're going to constantly in that space of uncertainty.
But that's the thing with like cash versus a card, right? Mm-hmm. Like if when I have cash, I know exactly what I'm spending it on. And then, but when you're just using the credit card, it's like, it's out of mind, out of sight, you know, and you just scan
my
it.
Money. I feel like
it's not my money.
I am one of those people that's like, if it's cash, it's not money.
Ooh. It's a girl math.
I thought I was the weird one, but then I saw it in those girls math TikTok videos that I'm not the only one. Like if I have cash, if I find like $50 mm-hmm. in my purse, that money does not count.
You just got paid.
I just got paid. If I have
that's why
money
I call it,
in
I'm
my
rich.
Pocket, like wallahi, like I'm like, ooh, I can go get some sushi.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't count that as a spending.
Yeah.
But one thing I also realized is that when we were having this conversation and when I was talking about myself and so on and so forth, is that the concept of money and how money relates to you and how money makes you feel mm-hmm. is the trauma part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I was told from a very young age. And I think this is probably the only episode where maybe I am a little bit healthier than all of you guys.
What? Are you bragging?
No, I'm just saying, like, normally I'm the one that's like, I'm the most traumatic or traumatized or whatever. But
girl, I don't have any trauma. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. That's what I just said. I'm the most normally.
Go ahead.
Anyway, so what I was trying to say was that normally when people have, and I kind of have learned this through now my aunts and so on and so forth, is that I grew up in the idea of like our house, our income. It doesn't matter what your neighbor has. It doesn't matter what your neighbor is doing or what, you know, whatever your environment is doing. Mm-hmm. So if you have $10 in your account and, you know, you can only spend $9 of that because the $1 is for your rent or whatever. I'm just, you know, mm-hmm. simplifying it. And that your neighbor is working with $20. Mm-hmm. You don't look down and you don't look up. Or if your neighbor has $5 and mm-hmm. they're, you know, you mm-hmm. don't look up and you don't look down. Mm-hmm. And that mentality also kind of goes to the idea of, regardless of, like, let's say, for example, if you are making $100, make sure you give yourself $1 to mm-hmm. spend on yourself the way you want to. Mm-hmm. That kind of alleviates the guilt aspect of it. So like if I'm spending, and then like when I was in high school and I used to work mm-hmm. and then also attach money with reward. So like instead of spending money mm-hmm. For like if I want a purse that's like really a little bit expensive, mm-hmm. I would attach it to a goal. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, inshallah, like when I was in high school, I would say, okay, when I get, like if I get a straight A's this semester, mm-hmm. then I'll get myself this mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. When you're older, you say, okay, if I saved this much mm-hmm. or if I, you know, worked this much or if I, whatever, I stuck to this goal of reading this mm-hmm. many books or whatever, then I'll get myself this thing. Mm-hmm. That way it alleviates the guilt of it. Yeah, and you take it out of that 1% of the income that you're getting.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was just
I think that's a really good plan, a way to go about it. And I think that is a really good, healthy way that, you know, you're learned by the environment that you're in. And I think that is something that to change the perspective, reframing the aspect of your relationship with money, mm-hmm. with money. And I think, but we also have to understand that for people who have not, even though that sounds really good and to apply it, unless they excessively worked on that mm-hmm. and try to unlearn the behavior that prior to came to it, mm-hmm. it makes it so hard because the same thing that we were saying earlier is like, if I know I don't have money, I'm not going to look at my account, mm-hmm. right?
So then let's go back to, I guess, what we started with at the beginning of the episode in terms of like when you come, you know, come into a union with another person, mm-hmm. how do these like languages or ways of dealing with money come up? And when conflicts happen is when you have completely different views, right? When, you know, you or your husband are one of you guys wants to save more, or one of you guys, you know, wants to spend more. How do you deal with that situation? And how do you avoid that crisis?
I think when it comes to money, you have to have, first of all, if for those that are not already in a new union, I would say you have to have that conversation clearly with no sugarcoating before you get into marriage, right? Not just about like, what's your debt? What's this, what's that? But like, how do you relate to money? Mm-hmm. How does money make you feel? You know, is it important for you to have money? Is it important for you to look like you have money?
And not just asking, but like, I feel like putting scenarios out there. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like sometimes when you're talking to somebody, they can tell you anything, right? They can tell you, oh, you know, like a million or whatever.
Until you see it,
you know? And I think, you know, setting up scenarios or, you know, asking questions in a way where, like, you can really see what their relationship is with money is, I feel like, a lot more helpful.
Definitely. And then also talking about your end goal, right? Like, what does your rich life look like? I don't know if you guys have been watching, if you guys have seen this Netflix show. It's a show called Your Rich Life, I think. I don't remember. And he talks about, what does your rich life look like? If you were rich, what does that mean? How do you perceive being rich? Mm-hmm. Does that mean a white picket fence, a house, and like, you know, like, 9-to-5 job and like having a good savings retirement account. Is that your rich life? Are you imagining a yacht and a boat and well, you know, whatever that extravagancy is? What does your rich life look like? How do you plan on getting there? Right. And having that conversation of like, okay, where, because some people, they don't ever want to they don't care about being rich. They care about being stable. They care about being, what do you call it?
Like security.
Secure. Yeah. They care about being secure and stable. Right. So, and if you're marrying someone that's ambitious and that's just want to go get it and like, or, you know, some people are not really ambitious, but they want to look ambitious. They want to look rich. They want the newest house. They want the newest car when they're buying it with a credit card that's 29%, you know, APR. So like, you just have to have that real honest and sometimes open up the book in marriage. While you are married, you can't be oblivious to the spending habits of each other. I don't believe in secrecy and in anything, but this one is like a no-go. You have to be able to talk about money openly. And I don't think, regardless, I consider myself a very independent person. I make money for the household too, just like my husband does. But when we come to the table, I'm like, even if I'm trying to buy from Amazon, from my $200 of, let's say, my budget of the month, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And if it's going to step $5 off of that budget that I have allocated for myself, you know, for whatever, I have to consult with my husband. That's not asking for his permission. That's working together, because I don't know if that $5 is going to skew something somewhere, right? So we have to sit down and have a conversation about it and be like, hey, I'm planning on spending this much outside of my budget, or, you know, I have this extra budget from my $200 that I didn't spend. Where do you think we should put it?
Yeah. So I think for me, I would say you have to ask how did you grow up around money with your household? What was your parents like with money? And what were you exposed to? Because that exposure shows that how that person is doing. Because we all have scarcity mindset when it comes to money. And if you see
a lot of us.
Yes. And if you seeing how your parents and your family member has doing it growing up in that environment, you take on the same example that Bonnie provided about our aunt. You take examples and you apply those examples subconsciously without not even knowing. And I think asking those questions, like, how did you grow up with money? How's your parents like with money? That would kind of also, it kind of give you an idea. You're not really looking for like, oh, this person has a lot of money sitting on it. You're asking an open-ended question. And now you just have to observe how they have relationship with their money. And that's what one way to kind of give you a little bit of glimpse of how they deal with money.
So I think one thing I want to transition into is the fact that sometimes when one person has the money, right, it is power and control, right, in terms of the dynamics within the relationship. And I want to, like, get you guys' opinion on that in terms of, like, are you guys, in Islam, his money is my money, my money is my money, right? So how would you guys navigate that in terms of, do you guys have joint, would you have joint accounts? Would you have your separate account? And is it safe to say that you can have your own money that is just yours?
You can.
Yeah. And in two scenarios, right? One where like you are working and you are making your own money. And the other scenario is that you don't work, you are a stay at home mom. But he's still responsible for your
Those
finances.
Are two different questions.
Yes, I know.
So separately.
Both scenarios though.
So because let's do the first one.
Okay.
Let's say you're working and you both are bringing money in. If there is, I think the question to ask is like, what time and days that you're living in right now, in the time and days that we live in, one income, unless he's making more than $300,000 a year, one income is not going to be able to provide for the whole family.
Depending on your lifestyle. But
even if it is a lifestyle with education, with the bills, with the all payment, I'm sorry, but I don't think like even that, imagine like one income would not be able to sustain one household unless you have extra side hustles or businesses to kind of nudge
compensate.
Make it. Yeah, because even if you make 100,000 and it's not going to be enough for it to take care of kids and the family and your car insurance, your car, all that crap that comes to it, right? So in that sense, there's aspect of contributing in. And I do think that it's okay for the woman to have her own account. And then there should also be a joint account based on that aspect of it. But if you're going to talk about the aspect of stay home, that's a little bit tricky. And I don't have a lot of like, I don't know, that conversation itself makes me feel uncomfortable because it makes me feel like financially, how are you, if anything happens, how are you going to take care of yourself? Is there that conversation happening with you and your spouse? Right? Like, just unpredictable things can happen. He can get sick. You can get sick. Something can happen in that system. What are you going to do? And I think being a kind of having that conversation head on is probably.
What if you're a stay at home wife, but you have a degree? You just choose to stay home.
Are you asking my personal opinion?
I'm asking your personal opinion. Yeah, both of you guys. I'm asking your personal opinion.
I don't know if I can be a stay-at-home mom because I feel like for me, I like working. I like working. I like the mental contribution that I have to the society. It might not be like full-time excessive working. It will be work of like manageable where a priority of the families are being stated. And then my work comes second after that. First family and then second my work because, but I like working. That's the only reason I can't do stay home parenting thing for me.
Like I would love to be a stay home mom, right? Like, but within the confines, like, with a big enough allowance.
I like that too.
That makes sense.
That's really good.
You know, with a big enough allowance where, you know, I can do my little spa days and I can, you know, do my stuff here and there.
I think you're talking about Emiratis and Bahrainians and Qataris and Sudanese wives.
I dressed the part too.
And that's Sudanese Saudis wives. Like those, I think those lifestyle, that's what you want.
That really is what I want. Because at the end of the day, I think that me personally, I've come to the realization that the biggest contribution that I can make is raising really amazing children that are able to participate in the world.
I mean, that makes sense. So,
and I think it's taken me a long time to realize that because I've always worked all through high school, all through college, and if anybody knows me, I'm always working. And I think I've gotten to a space in my life where I'm just tired. I just need a break. I just need to.
That I can second it. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a difference of being, I want to be temporary, like take a pause from working and then get back to it.
I
like working. What about you, Bonnie?
I was just thinking about it, both the things that both of you guys were saying, and I don't think I'm made to be a stay-at-home mom in the essence that like I don't work at all. Like I think one thing I realized actually specifically with this maternity leave that I had is that I love staying home with my kid. And this is new. This is new information. Like, I've never been the person that's like, stay at home till like my, you know, but I loved staying at home for 3 months and just being at home and not doing any, well, not having to clock in somewhere. Right. But at the same time, at the same token, this is the most productive I've ever been in that 3 months time. So like, I was like, creating businesses and I was like creating NGOs and I was creating, you know, like I was doing things that were like my passion projects. So I realized like I would be a stay at home. I want to be rich enough that I don't have to clock in anywhere and I can spend most of my time with my family. But I don't want to give up my passion projects and I don't want to give up my financial independence. And then when it comes to the original question that you guys were talking about, when it comes to like, is my money his money? sorry, my money, and his money, my money, if I'm working or if I'm stay-at-home mom. I think the idea sounds great, but then regardless, like, I think regardless if you're working or if you're not working, I think everyone should, the money pile should be available to everybody. Mm-hmm. Everything that comes into the household should be available to everybody, meaning that from that pool of money gets mm-hmm. taken out the food, the mortgage, the kids spending, mali, and then everyone gets an allowance. If I get, like I said, $200 allowance, he gets $200 allowance. If I am a stay-at-home mom and I don't have an income, then that $200, the only fair way of doing that is that that $200 allowance that I have, I put it away.
Right.
You know, I put mm-hmm. it away for a rainy day for myself. Mm-hmm. Because for me, being a being fair, right, in today's economy, it doesn't make sense where I am taking $200 to spend and then $200 to put away while my husband that's working and coming home is taking that $200 and then to do whatever, that's his allowance, while, like, you know what I mean, that mm-hmm. other money is spent for everybody, because it's not like I'm using that $200 to buy groceries, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think any money, any coin that comes into the household should come into a pool where it's accessible to everybody. And once you are married, you have to mm-hmm. think in a union mm-hmm. matter, right? That's how I think allowances are great. Allowances are awesome in the sense that, like, the more money you have, the more allowance you get, like mm-hmm. Apshiro said, right? Mm-hmm. So, but at the same time, it's up to you if you want to save that allowance or if you want to blow that allowance. Mm-hmm. Regardless if you're working, mm-hmm. and you're bringing in money to the pool, or if you are a stay-at-home mom. That's just how I see it.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes really good. I think we all want to have a little bit of financial freedom. It sounds yeah. like all three of us have a similar yeah. idea around that. But I do want to talk about a little bit of differently for a single woman out there when it comes to financial freedom and this aspect of it. This is great for couples and people who are planning on getting married, and getting this advice for people who are already married and how they're doing it. And I think this is something that I'm also keeping noted in the back of my head and how y'all do it. And that mm-hmm. means that how people can learn. As far as for, like, people who are single, both men and women, I think it's a great time for you to kind of learn about this information that's been shared, learn about the educational aspect that you don't have access to yet. So kind of taking a step back and, like, what is budgeting looks like for me right now, mm-hmm. and what is saving looks like right now for me, what is investment looks like for me right now, what is borrowing and giving to other people looks like for me, like, am I comfortable with doing that, mm-hmm. and what does it look like with when I'm married that my husband might do something like that, how do I have conversation, do I feel uncomfortable with that? I think sometimes we shy away because we hear so much about money causing problems mm-hmm. between people and their relationships, even interpersonal relationships, yeah. like friends and families and sisters and brothers and in that level. But I think we also need to learn that if there is a clear communication about, hey, I'm borrowing you this money, I need it back, mm-hmm. versus I'm giving you this money.
Yeah.
Vania's question. And I'm giving you this money. Mm-hmm. That's a different conversation, right? So my thing is that for individuals who are singles who are listening to this conversation, please take the time to get to know yourself with your relationship with money. Just like we talk about therapies, we talk about, you know, taking care of your mental health, learning what's your needs basis. Financial issues are huge in relationship. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons, like Apshiro said earlier, that people do get divorced. And that is very stressed conversation to have, mm-hmm. because you haven't talked about the way you were raised around money. You haven't talked about your own insecurity around money. You haven't even talked about your own conditioning things or that has been happened to you all your life. And now you're noticing, like, I want something and I want to get it, mm-hmm. versus, well, do I want it or do I need it?
Yeah. And which all that's going to really, like, help you, yes. once you figure out all that as a single person, then you can show up so much better when you are in a union.
Yeah.
So,
definitely. And I just, earlier when Dahabe was talking about borrowing, that's one thing that kind of just jumped at me. And if I give anyone any advice, is that don't borrow people money. Give it away.
Yes.
Like, if you give away what you can live without. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say, for example, if someone asks you for $1,000 and if you can live with giving them $500 and them now giving you back, mm-hmm. Then just give that. Don't give the $1,000 expecting the $1,000 back. Mm-hmm. That kills relationships. Really I don't believe in borrowing money. If I give you what I can live without, and then if you have the ability to return that money to me, alhamdulillah. Mm-hmm. If you don't, our relationship is safe. That's my sadaqah.
So do you borrow it with the intention of not expecting it back, not or do you say like, okay, I'm letting you, like, it's fine, this is my gift to you? How do you do that?
So I kind of just do with that without expecting it back, because I mean, if they want to give it to me,
but the person knows that they're borrowing it though.
They think they're borrowing
okay.
it.
Okay.
And they think they're borrowing, because I'm not bawling like that. Well, yeah. If I am bawling like that, then I would be like, khalas, furatlu, you know?
So it's a mindset thing.
It's helped for me. You a lot. Then I don't have any grudge, okay. any resentment. That I'm not, makes sense. You don't have to hide from me when you see me. Yeah. You know what I mean? You could just live your life. I'll live mine. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And wrapping up with it, one thing I want to say is make sure you. Therapy is not just like about your relationship with money, mm-hmm. and what money means to you, specifically you, because you can't fix someone else, right? Mm-hmm. You have to fix yourself, and you have to be able to clarify what your relationship is, mm-hmm. and how you attract money, and at the same time kind of zoning your money out, your mm-hmm. savings. You pay yourself first before you pay anything else. Mm-hmm. Savings have to be one of your bills, right? Mm-hmm. Your savings, your bills, your investments, mm-hmm. your donations. The more you give, the more you get.
Yeah.
I am 100% believer in that. Your donations, make sure and make sure you allocate those and not budge. And then you're obviously your what's it called? What Abshara said, what is that word?
Bills.
No.
Emergency money?
No, the emergency money too, but the
security.
Saudi people.
Allowance. Your allowance.
Allowance, yep. So, yeah. And I think that sounds like really good. And I think that's the way to kind of work on your financial literacies, mm-hmm. and financial planning, so that you can unlearn a lot of conditioning behaviors, mm-hmm. that we all have learned, mm-hmm. from society, from our family, from our friends. And so we can have a better relationship with money and better relationship with our significant other and people in our lives.
Yeah,
so.
And just give people like that space to grow too.
Yes.
You know, and like, people are not perfect, and your relationships, your spouse, none of you guys are perfect. So just, you know, talk it out, have that conversation, and then get on the same page.
Absolutely. And remember, money is just a tool.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's an important tool, but it's a tool.
Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
This has been Difficult Conversations.
Join the conversation in the comment section or on our social media pages. We do not have all the answers, and our biggest goal is to kick off the conversation and get it started. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accept our efforts and use us for catalysts of change.